Listen, people, Private Ryan isn't gonna save himself on this Hacksaw Ridge. Every few years, some soldiers get stuck behind enemy lines on our cinema screens, and Hollywood's squarest jaws have to go get 'em. And thus, Black Hawk Down, Black Hawk Down, Black Hawk Down, leave all that in, was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
See, I tried to Pittsburgh it a little bit. Black Hawk Down.
You got real Yinzard.
My name's Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm joined here by a big mouth and a long neck. Tag yourself. It's Robin Hitchcock.
I'm seeing my dead mother in the shadows.
And Camila Adams.
I guess I have a long neck.
An elegant neck.
Yeah, that was last week, Land Before Time, 44 and two-thirds. I'm not going to tell you where that falls on our chart because it was precisely 0.33 above the previous movie we talked about. Look Who's Talking. So just go back to the Look Who's Talking episode and go over those stats again. We didn't like it very much. Most people on social media confirmed that it was traumatic. A couple people were like, I've never seen it before. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, poor yeah. Joseph Finn. So.
Right, exactly. It's like, yeah. This was not an endorsement. We did the hard work, so you don't have to.
That's you already know about death. You don't need this.
Right.
But that was then. This is Black Hawk Down, and boo.
Oh, boy.
Boo.
Oh, boy.
This is not the worst movie we've ever watched.
No.
This is not, by the score I'll give it, really right at the bottom. But it is one of the most... Hey, movie, fuck you for making me watch you movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely. It was a reason why, apparently there was a reason why I never watched this damn movie.
And... Sean, had you seen it before?
No, that's what I was about to ask. Okay. So Camila's a no, I'm a no, Robin?
I had only seen it because of my Oscars quest. Mm. So yeah. I watched it within the last couple of years, so it was kind of a bummer to have to watch it again.
Of course it was nominated for an Oscar.
It was nominated for a bunch of Oscars, which I'm sure we'll get to.
It's just like, that's the formula.
Yeah, it's an interesting mix of wrong-headed and no fun. Like, it's one thing when a movie is problematic, but you're like, but we had a good time, we'll overlook. No, it's problematic and miserable for 2.5 hours.
So unnecessary. And I'm starting to wonder, like, who is the audience for this type of movie, for these military war movies? Like, I mean, I know that I just can't imagine somebody who's actually been in war or has actually been in the military to be like, yeah, this is how I want to spend the next 2.5 hours.
It's the same way that, like, people, like, my aunt works in medical machines and she always gets mad at, like, CSI and similar shows. She's like, our machines can't do that, right? Or, like, lawyers can't watch Law and Order, right? It's that, but with PTSD.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, like, I assume people who have done any kind of military service have no interest in this kind of movie.
Right, and that's just like riddled with just like the military talk. Like, again, yeah. Like, you know, I don't know what you guys are talking about. Like, I don't understand what happened.
It feels like fucking Shakespeare.
Right. Shakespeare with heavy artillery.
Right.
If anything, it's a relief when the one asshole general, you know, Baldy McDrawlerson, shows
up. Sam Shepard.
Yeah, it's Sam Shepard. That makes sense.
He deserves a little bit of respect, despite his inclusion in this film.
I know. But he shows up to be like, listen, cowboy, you're on the first yard line, and there's a cow in the barn. It's like, at least these horrible, folksy word slingings are better than gibberish jargon that we're getting the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Military, army, military, army.
I thought about making that my plot recap.
I'm trying to find a GIF that was just a gun firing nonstop on a loop, because that's the movie.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, if you didn't see this, don't. Anyway, no, here's Robin Hitchcock, who is going to distill all of those pow-pows and blood geysers into something resembling a plot. Ready? And... go.
It's 1993, and it's a terrible time to be in Somalia. There's a civil war and a related famine. The UN and US Special Forces are there to try to give faceless black people some food, but other slightly less faceless, evil black people are stopping them by shooting down Black Hawk helicopters. The movie follows a bunch of almost exclusively white U.S. soldiers with no personalities as they are horribly killed over the course of many hours. It should probably be an aggressively anti-war film, but I don't know, between filming and release, September 11th happened. So what happens when you mix Top Gun-style jingoism with hyper-violent realism? It goes about as well as when you combine the U.S. imperialist war machine and a humanitarian crisis in an African country. That is to say, very poorly.
This has been both a 51-second recap and a brief TED Talk to the point. Absolutely spot on. I know this isn't the main complaint. There's much more. Should have been Black Hawks down. Plural. There was right. More than one.
Right. So when it happened in the first, like, 15, 30 minutes or whatever, I was like, oh, so that's it? We just got this one. It's like, no. There are many.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Let me get the facts out of the way, because I feel like we all have a bunch of rants to get on.
Yes.
Do you have some commentary? Like, I am genuinely curious how much this movie being filmed in spring of 2001 and coming out in winter 2002 changed what this movie is. Do you have information on that subject?
No.
Okay.
I don't get the impression that it changed much, because it's Ridley Scott, and fuck you, I'm Ridley Scott. Like, I don't think... I'm sure that altered the marketing.
Sure.
But
and the audience and the Academy reception, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. You know, there was still a round of controversy over, you know, the depiction of the Somalis in the film, which we will get into, I'm sure, which says to me that nothing was softened here. Like, this wasn't, like, taken back to make sure that it was more palatable. I think it was just as unpalatable the whole time.
Right. Okay, we'll get into it. Facts first.
Yeah. Yeah. Black Hawk Down opened on December 28th, 2001, at the time just in 4 theaters, so it could qualify for the Oscars, went wide and won its first wide weekend January 18th of 2002, $28.6 million in second place, ahead of the debuting Snow Dogs with $17.8 million. Black Hawk Down won its second and third weekends. It is a 3-week number one movie in America, holding off debuts including A Walk to Remember, The Count of Monte Cristo, and The Mothman Prophecies. All failed to dethrone Black Hawk Down. It was defeated week 4 and fell all the way to 4th place. The winner was Collateral Damage. Big Fat Liar was in 2nd. The Rollerball remake was in 3rd. All 3 of those debuted that 4th weekend. 5 weeks in the top 10, a total of $108.6 million. 18th place for 2001, just ahead of The Princess Diaries, two very similar films. Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
This won 2 Oscars, Robin.
I know it won editing. I assume the other one is sound.
That is correct. It won Best Editing, defeating A Beautiful Mind, The Fellowship of the Ring, Memento, and Moulin Rouge. And Sound, defeating Fellowship of the Ring, Moulin Rouge, Amelie, and Pearl Harbor. 2 more nominations. Any guesses, Robin?
The other sound category?
No, this was one of the last years before the sound split.
Oh, well, welcome back to the current affairs. Yeah, let's say cinematography? And then I know it got a director nomination.
Yes. Ridley Scott was nominated for directing, lost to Ron Howard, who is a bad director, as we've discussed, for A Beautiful Mind. And cinematography, lost to The Fellowship of the Ring. It was strongly pushing for a Best Picture nomination, and at one point was considered a possible contender to win Best Picture. This was a weird year. A Beautiful Mind is a whatever movie. People liked Fellowship of the Ring, but it was seen as a long shot that A Lord of the Rings was going to win Best Picture. People thought this could could have won. As I understand, it just got kneecapped by not being nominated for anything at all at the Golden Globes, and that kind of killed its momentum. Robin, do you know more about this?
No, I do remember it being a surprise that it did not get a Best Picture nomination. And this was also at this time when people got Best Director nominations without getting a corresponding Best Picture nomination, it was almost always for like a small, weird, arty movie, right? So like you've got like your Being John Malkovich's and your Sweet Hereafters and your Three Colors Red kind of things, right? It was very, very rarely this more like Das Boot kind of situation where it's like we're giving this action movie director a nomination for making a, air quotes, great action movie. So this was not an expected director picture split, but it happened. That's what I remember. I was 15 at the time. Wait, that's not
a
true.
Beautiful Mind.
I was
won.
A teenager.
Yeah, you were aware of them. A Beautiful Mind won over Gosford Park, In the Bedroom, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, and Moulin Rouge.
Not a great year.
I mean, it could have easily took... I mean, I love In the Bedroom.
Me too. I love that movie.
In the Bedroom is the best of those five movies.
I completely agree. I can't believe that movie has so fallen out of... No one knows that exists, but that movie's fantastic.
Oh, it's really good. But at the same time, I think it could have taken that spot on the nominations list pretty easily.
Yeah.
Of course, Mulholland Drive should have been nominated in every category and won them all, but...
Mulholland Drive, which also got a Best Director nomination.
It did.
In the
David
bedroom.
Lynch lost to Ron fucking Howard. Go on. Anyway.
I was going to say that In the Bedroom is part of why I do the Oscars death race now, because early version of the Oscars death race was that in 2000 I had seen all the Best Picture nominees before the ceremony, and that was kind of fun for me. And so in subsequent years it was like I'll at least see the Best Picture nominees, and I loved In the Bedroom so much, and that's not a movie I would have bothered to see otherwise, and I was like, I should keep doing this.
Are you going to win this year? This is the last episode that will, certainly the last episode that will come out before the Oscars.
I am capable of winning. Every movie I have not seen is available to me.
All right.
If I sign up for Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus is great. It's not that much money, and it is that thing that we want from Peacock, where there's just hundreds and hundreds of old Paramount movies you've never heard of, and some that you have, just sitting there waiting for you. That's how I watched the unlikely double feature of Saint Maud and Naked Gun 2.
Ooh, let's talk about Saint Maud later.
One night. Yes, absolutely. Black Hawk Down, that's what we're avoiding the subject of. It lost two MTV Movie Awards. There, it was a Best Picture nominee. The nominees were Legally Blonde, Black Hawk Down, Fast and the Furious, Shrek, and the winner, Fellowship of the Ring. It also lost Best Action Sequence for the first helicopter crash, which, no complaints there. Very good action sequence. The final race in Fast and the Furious was also a nominee, as was some nonsense in Lara Croft Tomb Raider. But the winner was in Pearl Harbor, where they Pearl Harbor.
Never
That's
seen
the
it.
Winner?
I have no idea.
I'm gonna say right after September 11th.
Yeah, yeah.
National brain space was very weird.
Yeah. Couple of short notes. The helicopter crash was practical effects. They augmented it with CGI later, but for the most part, they just really carefully crashed a helicopter. So.
Phew.
That's some of the rare points in this movie's favor.
It did look and sound extremely cool.
Yeah. No, no complaints about the part where the Black Hawk goes down. That, you did it. As discussed, this is the film debut of one Tom Hardy. He had previously appeared in Band of Brothers. That was about it. Camila, any thoughts?
Blink and you'll miss him. Like, it was, I spent an awful lot of time looking for him, and like, I think he shows up. I think he shows up when he finally shows up is when Ewan McGregor gets ready to go, and he's like giving him advice on what to take with him. But another like a big complaint I have of this movie is that first of all, it's 98% white dudes on screen, and we have one black soldier, and 75% of those white dudes all look the same. I couldn't keep anybody straight.
Okay, are we finished with facts? Can we unpack that?
Here's a nice one to go out okay. on, just so that we said something nice. There were constantly stray dogs on set. There were just dogs wandering around. Ridley Scott liked the look of them in some shots, so he didn't do anything about it. And then 7 of those dogs were adopted by crew members.
Aww,
isn't that nice?
That's yeah. lovely. So the best and only great thing to come out of this movie is yeah. that doggies got found forever home.
Aww, yes.
That's sweet.
Other like than it. That, fuck this movie, Robin. You so, were saying?
I was going to say, it is just alarming how white the U.S. military is depicted as being in right. this movie. And it's just, that's not reality. That's,
no, not in the least.
So, so far away from what the act, and even if you're like, oh, well, there's special forces and there's probably racism making special forces a little bit more disproportionately white.
Listen.
Even with that, it's just absurd. It's absurd. And the only thing I can think of is just the like patently racist narrative motive of, oh, well, we want to make it clear who are right. the Americans and who are the Somalis.
Exactly.
And that's gross.
Right.
That's just disgusting.
That's basically how I saw it too, is that they just wanted to be like, perfectly clear, yeah. black is the bad guys, white right? are the good guys.
It's so gross. And especially considering this is a civil war, right? This is yeah. a war between a bunch of dark-skinned Africans, some of which are the air quotes bad guys. I mean, listen, holding food at a port to starve your enemies, that's, I'm pretty comfortable
That's
calling
bad.
That bad guys.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty comfortable calling that bad guys. But like, it just feels so, it just feels racist. It's racist.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. yeah. All 2.5 hours, racist.
Yes.
There's just no
well,
way around it.
Even the existence of the film, because you get to the end crawl, which I guess to its credit doesn't hide the fact.
I'm going to lose my mind about that end crawl.
It says there are 19 American soldiers who lost their lives. Not going to tell you that's not a tragedy. Any life lost in war, that's a tragedy. Right. 19 American soldiers and more than 1,000 Somalis. So in other words, they lost 50 for every one of ours.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to claim that story. Right. I don't care who's good and who's bad. If 1,000 died over there and 19 died over there, we don't get to make a movie about the 19.
Just to be clear, those 1,000 probably would not have died if we weren't there in the first place.
Right.
Right.
And also
300,000
like,
Somalis and died because
those
of the civil war.
Right.
Right. That's a horrible tragedy.
Right. And like 19, those 19, they chose to be there.
Right.
Not and to say that, you know, it makes their death any less tragic and traumatic, but it's just, it's, that's
and,
how it is.
And their names are on the screen. It says 1,000 Somalis died in this conflict and 19 U.S. soldiers. And then they show the 19 U.S. soldiers. And it just is so erasing.
Yeah, it's so unbalanced.
It's so gross.
Well, unlike Black Hawk Down, nobody saw this movie. Robin, you remember The Impossible with Naomi Watts?
Of course I do.
It was Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
This is in the South Asian tsunami where, I could get it wrong by a factor of 10, but I want to say 10 to 15,000 people died. And
I think it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, it almost certainly is. And it's a story about how there was this one fucking British family on vacation who got caught up in the chaos. And, you know, the whole town is devastated and they're separated and they're blown by the waves. And they found each other. Good. That's good. I mean, if I was literally you, I would be really happy about that. Right. However, you're swimming through a sea of corpses.
Right.
It's like, oh, it's hey. I'm glad that worked out. We've got bigger shit. Like,
two quick points. First of all, it
the
was
solution
around
is don't make the movie. Okay. Like, it's like very good, nice, good, not a movie.
Two quick points. It was around 250,000.
I said by a factor of 10.
Yep.
Yeah.
And also, the family that movie is about was a Spanish family, and they were like, too close to not white.
Right. <yeah.
laughs> Let's make them British.
Right, exactly. They're still foreigners, but they're white foreigners.
They are swarthy white people.
So, yeah, I mean...
Tom Holland is really good in The Impossible.
Oh, yeah, he's the kid,
yeah,
isn't he?
He's so good.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, Naomi Watts was good. I'm not going to tell you she didn't, you know, deserve a nomination.
Sure.
Because she showed up and did some miserable stuff. But yeah. The movie, anyway. Aside from all of this, as if that isn't enough. After about the halfway point of this 2.5 hour long movie, it's just some shit happening.
So,
you know, the interesting quote unquote is until the mission goes sideways, which happens at about 1:10. And after that, it's just these soldiers go over here, those soldiers go over there, these ones die, that one's wounded, these guys go back to base, these guys come in. 1 hour later, some of them go back. There's no narrative drive after
exactly.
that point.
Right.
So that's the thing. That's why I asked about September 11th, because like it feels like this story is about U.S. like having this incredible military machine that is completely unprepared for a specific kind of warfare, which like should be old news after the Vietnam War. But it apparently isn't. I don't know. It was like, let's tell this story again. And it feels like this should be really anti-military, right? But then the trappings, like I said in my recap, it feels like Top Gun. It feels very much like, hey, young men, don't you want to go do this and be a hero?
Right.
Those fucking speeches at the end where they're like, I'm glad I'm a soldier, though.
Right?
I'm covered in blood. I don't have an arm anymore. It's good to be a soldier.
I'm just like, what is the point of this movie? What is the point of it?
I have no idea other than, yeah, just a bunch of like, maybe it is just a bunch of propaganda in order to like, yes, join the military. This is what you want to do. And then like there was the moment where Josh Hartnett, like in early on in the film where he's trying to justify what they're doing is like, you know, it's a terrible thing. Like we're here to help. And I think somebody else, one of the other lookalikes that he's talking to was like, I don't think so. But it's all usually these movies are all usually very pro-military.
I mean, the military gives them the helicopters and shit, so they get some say in how you depict the military.
Right.
But, like, this is a disaster. This is an example of the military failing horribly.
Right.
So it's like, I don't know. It's like, you know, I work in comedy, right? And it's like if I tried to make a recruitment film with comics bombing...
It's like, nobody would want to do that.
Like, sorry to use a loaded metaphor there, but, like, if you had a bunch of, like, comics standing on stage and getting zero laughs, and I was like, be all that you can be, how would that be effective?
That is keeping folks far as hell away from comedy or trying anything new.
Right. But, like, this really felt like they were trying to make me go rah-rah, yay, U.S.,
Yeah, I don't know. And I think it was just what their resilience. Is that what we're working on? Is that,
you might
is that
be
we're
right.
going off of? The fact that if you're a soldier.
Far be it for me to deride war heroes on a silly little podcast. But like, was there a lot of resilience? Like a couple.
Other than they kept doing it? I don't know. Like that's,
yeah.
I'm not
Two of them got the Medal of Honor posthumously.
Right, yeah.
I name-checked Hacksaw Ridge in the intro, which is not a very good movie either. It's more Mel Gibson gore porn. But, like, it's about a guy spending days of his life one by one without his legs carrying wounded soldiers down a cliff. We're like... Yeah, that's a movie story. That's resilience. These right. guys had a general that fucked up, and then they died, a few of them slowly. Like,
I think if
sorry, thank you for your service, people who were over there.
I think
God, I hope you're not listening.
I know. I really, I wanted to know more about Ewan McGregor's character. I feel like that there was a missed opportunity in tell that story about
right?
how, you know, he got stuck in whatever office job that he had, and then he finally gets to go out, and then he comes back. It's like, you know what? I didn't like that. Maybe.
So one problem with this movie is it's 2.5 hours long, and the first half hour is the only time they attempt to give anyone any character.
Right.
Ewan McGregor, to me, was pretty much the only one who stuck.
Right.
Like
I couldn't tell you anything else about any of the other ones.
Not a thing. Not one thing. Like, I don't know their names. I don't know their ranks or even what branch of the military they're in.
I have no idea. That's
at various points, they would do, like, pissing contests between the Marines and the Army, and I was like, none of this means anything to me.
So that's the other thing. So there were different branches of military there, because I just assumed they were all the same.
I thought it was the Army Rangers, but I, you know, there could have been.
It wasn't technically primarily
a U.S. operation. It was a U.N. operation.
Right. It's confusing. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, that half hour feels wasted. And like, I guess that Josh Hartnett's character is meant to be the main character?
Only because that his face was on like everything. And what's funny to me is, and you know, like, yes, I think Josh Hartnett was supposed to be like the big dog. This was like his big dramatical, you know, coming out, you know, because
wasn't
we've all
he also the main character in Pearl Harbor, a movie I've never seen?
I thought Ben Affleck was.
I think it's Ben Affleck.
Well, but he's also, it's like love triangle maybe between him.
I've never seen Pearl Harbor. Neither. I couldn't even tell you for sure that Josh Hartnett was in that. But
he is.
Okay, so yeah, so I don't know. Like, this was supposed to be like his big dramatical thing because, you know, he was the 90s hot boy for a while with like teen stuff, and you know, but I think he was supposed to be the main character. And it's funny to me considering how all the other dudes, and I'm sure Josh is doing very well for himself.
I don't know if he is.
He was in like Penny Dreadful or something. Like,
oh, that sounds right.
And I think he's in something else that I'm not watching. But like all these other dudes that ended up like overshadowing him by far. Like you got Ewan McGregor, even Orlando Bloom with his, you know, elf stuff, and Tom Hardy. So it's just like all these other guys with their little bit parts, they just kind of overshadow Josh in his career.
You are correct about his role in Pearl Harbor. That is right.
I quickly looked. He's still working. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
He's in the forgotten Guy Ritchie movie from the pandemic times, Wrath of Man.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah. I watched that. Mm-hmm.
We watched lots of things that year. They didn't all stick.
Right.
I figured we would get it, but I'm just going to read from Wikipedia to kind of cover some of the horrible things we're not even addressing. Somali nationals charged that the African actors chosen to play the Somalis in the film do not resemble the culturally unique features of the Horn of Africa, nor does the language they communicate in sound like the Afro-Asiatic tongue spoken by the Somali people. The abrasive way lines are delivered and lack of authenticity regarding the culture fails to capture the tone, mannerisms, and spirit of actual life in Somalia. No Somali actors were used in the movie. You might have guessed this when we launched the film at, hey, we didn't research this Middle Eastern market scene. Right. That, you know, the same market you see whether we're in Turkey or Saudi Arabia or Yemen or Morocco. Morocco is where it was filmed, by the way. We're actually looking at Morocco.
Very, very, very far away from Somalia.
Yes. Not only that, in that it was a UN mission, the Americans were not the only people there. And in fact, the only reason any Americans survived is because the Pakistani army showed up and pulled them out. They were there with a lot of Malaysian and Pakistani soldiers. It was Pakistani special forces that went into the market and pulled them out of there. So again, we ask, what
was the point of this movie? It was so unnecessary.
There is no goddamn point. But I do want to read you a sentence from Roger Ebert's review.
Four-star review.
Again, with this movie's, it's weird because it was made before September 11th, but just the way this movie's reception is shaped by September 11th, he says, the movie's implied message is that America on that day lost its resolve to risk American lives in distant and obscure struggles. And that mindset weakened our stance against terrorism.
What?
Right?
Okay, Roger.
Right? You know, noted foreign policy expert, Roger.
Right, you know. Exactly. It's like, you know, not to knock it, not that I don't want to do it, but you watch movies for a living. I'm going
to... I will try to save this for you, Candidate of the Truth, and it's not even worth that, but I watched another well-meaning white person in South Africa movie from the 1980s, from the apartheid era last night, A Dry White Season. And I went and read Roger Ebert's review and discovered that Roger Ebert studied at the University of Cape Town, presumably during apartheid.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
But then his wife was black, so, you know.
As Ava DuVernay would tell us, everybody knows about Roger Ebert.
Oh, yeah.
Cut in her talking about him.
I mean, everybody knows Roger had a black wife. You know what I mean? You know? It's like an honorary brother.
Everybody knows about Roger. Yeah, we all keep a scorecard on which you white boys in Hollywood move on over. Robert De Niro.
Is that a real, like, do you know what I'm talking about, Camilo? How in life itself, Ava DuVernay is like, everybody knows that Roger Ebert is okay because he married a sister, I think is literally what she says.
Yes.
I mean, you live with a sister? That's a whole different understanding of black women.
Yes, that is.
Is that a real thing?
I mean, you know what? I'm not going to deny it, but it's like, what's his name? Pacey. Josh Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, like, he showed up, like, recently, a couple years ago on something I was watching, and I was like, you know what? Pacey looks like he's got a little more swag in his step. Like, something's going on with Pacey. What is up with Joshua Jackson? Like, he grew up nicely. Like, you know, I never thought about him before. And then so I do a little Twitter search, do a little Instagram, and then I go up on his Instagram, and there's this beautiful black woman all over it. And I'm like, is this right? Is this all makes sense now? And then it's like, you know, my wife Jody, what, I forget her name, but it's just like, okay, Josh,
Smith,
I see you.
Turner,
young lady from Queen and Slim. I was like, all right, yeah. Josh, and you have been added to the list. And so,
before we wrap up, I wrote the words dumb metaphor so big on my notebook I won't let myself not bring up. The general tries to mop up the blood, but there's just too much. Go home. Your movie's over. Man, do I hate. I don't watch movies like trying to read into the visual symbolism. So if something jumps out and smacks me in the face like that, it's just like,
you've done too much. You've tried way too hard. Wow.
Also, they should have played Goodnight Irene when everyone said Irene 15 times. That would have been good. Anything else before we... People like this movie, I'm sure. I mean, because they saw it in the theater in 2001 at the time that Robin's talking about and haven't looked at it since, I'm sure there are people that like this movie.
I would have liked this movie if I saw it in the theater in 2002.
You said you would have?
Yeah.
I would have, yes.
Is it because, like, up until this point, we hadn't seen a lot of these kind of effects? Like, is this...
I mean... I don't know. They're saving, like, Sean mentioned Saving Private Ryan. Like, I think Saving Private Ryan was the first movie I saw that was like, well, here's what war is really like, in air quotes, right?
Yeah.
And this is, here's what modern war is really like. And there is something that's compelling about that as a safe white woman who, like, touch wood, will never experience that, right?
Right.
But now I'm an adult and... I also do think that we are all, the three of us are watching this now, like, slightly differently than we maybe would have, like, 2 months ago before the invasion of Ukraine. Like,
sure.
I think that war being very, very real right now makes this feel more gross.
I feel like I would have had the same effect. It would have had the same effect on me in the past.
Yeah.
Also because I, in my old job, I had done a lot of work with Somalian refugees.
Oh, that'll and, do it.
So, yeah. So, yeah, that would have affected me a little bit. But I think I've always just kind of been just ick about war movies in general. I can't think of one that I've just sat there and was like, yes, this is the one.
This probably, Fury. I liked Fury. No one really saw it.
I still haven't watched it. That's Brad Pitt, right?
Probably.
And that's the other thing, like, with
how much I remember it,
well, like, yeah, with most of these war movies, it's like, let's get every white actor in Hollywood and put them in this, like,
yes.
So it's like, these movies are great to play, you know, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Honestly, the war movies that I like are all the ones that are like, here are things that were going on alongside the war, right? Like Three Kings, I think, is a good example, where it's like, war is stupid. Meanwhile, we did a heist.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good example. I think that's a real problem, is that we didn't get to know any of our characters. And there was nothing really tying me to any of them.
And I do think in some ways that was intentional. They wanted to be like, this is just a bunch of random people who get thrown into a conflict they don't understand and they die horribly, right? Like, I can see that being an effective anti-war message. And then they chose not to do that.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, let's start with Camila to say a small number. Camila?
I gave it 30 points for cute boys. So my my total score is 43.
All right. I mean, you know, like I said at the beginning, Hollywood's squarest jaws are all here. Robin?
I saw a tweet recently that said that you should judge a movie based on what it set out to do rather than what you wanted it to do.
Interesting.
And that made me flirt with having a high score, but I can't actually do it, so I'm going to give it a 50.
I've got a 33. Three of those points are for the song Minstrel Boy by Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros, plays over the end credits, quite good. The other 30 are technical, you know, effects and such.
Right.
33. That is an average of 42. Man, are we in those mid-40 doldrums.
Oh, well, come on, we gotta get a good one. We gotta get a good movie next.
To the bingo card. There's not a lot here, but I'm sure there were some explosions that didn't get looked at.
Absolutely.
Yes, totally.
Certainly on quantity, like you couldn't have looked at all of them if you wanted to.
Unless you have multiple eyes around your whole head.
I don't know. Did someone say that you should be out looking for the Somalis?
No.
You should be out looking for
the... That would require acknowledging the humanity of the Somalis.
Right. I was really, really pushing for a kiss in the rain.
Yeah. Jeremy Piven and Sam Shepard, lock eyes and lips. There's a lot of people in this movie. That was on some fact that, like, in the earliest conceptions, there were 100, like, named characters. And it's like, did any of them matter? Did you cut out all of the ones that I would have remembered at the end? This 42 is a pretty good score for a movie we absolutely hated. I guess we're going, like, Ridley Scott, you know how to direct a film.
It's like a technicality.
Right. Yeah. Right. Just because this, right. I mean, I can't honestly say this was a bad movie, but I can honestly say I hated it.
Right. Precisely. Robin, it's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. But before we get to that, Robin has an announcement. She's keeping us honest on a thing we said we'd do.
So last year, when we, for a long period of time, were recording every week because we were still in lockdown, I won an unprecedented fourth bingo in a calendar year. And on the fly, Sean and Camila decided that that meant I could pick a non-number one movie in America for us to do a bonus episode about. Sweet. And I am now going to tell you what it is, because I would love us to be able to record this and release it within a month. And that is, I want us to record an episode about Empire Records.
Yay!
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Happy Rex Manning Day.
Yeah,
when
so
is Rex Manning Day?
Rex Manning Day is April 8th.
Is it April 8th?
I'm pretty confident it is, because that's my grandmother's birthday.
Okay. I mean, I have it on my calendar anyway every year.
Well, one of my best friends in high school glued quarters to her bedroom floor just so that people would,
outstanding.
And you fall for it more than once.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not like you specifically remember. You're just like, you dropped a quarter.
Right. Yeah. Thank you, Robin.
That's exciting.
That'll be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will do that in addition to whatever.
Oh, yeah, dude. Ethan Embry is going to be at Steel City Con on Rex Manning Day.
What? Oh, my gosh.
Whoa. I'm going.
I might be there, because this is the largest accumulation of people from the Vacation series,
right?
Probably in the history of time.
Yeah, it's like Beverly and Chevy and
Beverly, Christie Brinkley, Randy Quaid, and Miriam Flynn. Wow. So Eddie and why am I blanking on her name? I've seen the movies 20... Anyway. And a bunch of the kids. Anthony Michael Hall, who's the first Rusty. Mm-hmm. Ethan Embry is the fourth Rusty.
For Vegas.
Dana Barron is the first Audrey. Yeah,
is
there's
Juliette
a whole
Lewis
bunch
gonna be
of
here?
Them. No. And I think the kid... Yeah, the European Vacation. There are three Rusties at this convention.
Wow.
You can get a picture with three Rusties.
How many Rusties? Rusties?
I already saw that they have, like, the Vacation panel, you know, on Saturday afternoon that says featuring every one of them but Chevy, because he's like, no, I'm not fucking. I will show up when I can get $130 every 4 minutes for an autograph.
Right.
After that.
It's like, what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to sit there and answer the same questions about the national
anthem. I wish I had more money in my pocket right now, because they've got Robert Englund and Nancy, Heather Langenkamp, as well. Wow. The Nightmare on Elm Street reunion. There's a lot going on at this one.
There is.
Christina Ricci.
Yeah, that just upped the game, just like me realizing that it's going to be Rex Manning Day.
Yeah.
Ethan here, because I was already gonna go because of him. But now,
oh, Rexy, well, you're so
say
sexy.
No more, Monet Moore.
We'll be singing Sugar High on the next episode or bonus episode sometime soon. Robin, you've been watching many, many films that are nominated for Academy Awards.
And I'm like, which ones do our listeners actually want to hear about? You know what I mean? Like I said in our last episode, like, this is the lonely portion of the Oscars death race where I'm like, who wants to talk about the Italian movie, The Hand of God?
Crickets.
Did you make it to the end?
I did, yes. The Hand of God, I think a lot of people probably have seen The Great Beauty.
Yeah.
That had a good crossover. It's the same director, and it's a autobiographical film where the first hour is like, look how wacky my family is. And then, spoilers, who cares? His parents die horribly.
Yeah.
In a carbon monoxide leak. And it's like very, very real, like, at the hospital when your family has died stuff. And I have experienced that. And so I just was like, nope. And then I went and watched the second
hour. That's on me. I should have given you a little heads up there.
I don't know how much it would have helped, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it is incredibly real. The way that that is depicted, at least, is very, very similar to how it was for me. And I think that what was jarring about it was that the first part of the movie was so cartoonish. Like, it's funny. I feel like I've watched a lot of Italy movies this year, and I feel like this was more cartoonish than House of Gucci and literal cartoon Luca.
I liked it. Did you like it for all of that?
I see why people would like it.
Maybe it's because they sent me a candle that smells like the movie should. I don't even know what that means.
Oh, wait. Yeah. When I come over to watch the Critics' Choice Awards, will you light it? Can I smell that?
If I remember to bring it home from the office, then yes. If not, you get the candle that smells like the movie Respect. Now, the Respect candle was much smaller. Maybe that's why it didn't get any nominations, used to say.
I saw all the shorts. Mm-hmm. One live-action short, if it's available to you, I highly recommend, is On My Mind. It is also very sad, but it's beautiful and also literally short. It's like less than 20 minutes. The animated shorts this year are horrible, but Robin, which is on Netflix, is precious.
And it's called, and you right. like it because it's called Robin.
I would like it even if it weren't called Robin, but I do have to admit I like it more because it is called Robin. And because I got to watch it with Colin and he just fully was like, you are bad at sneaking.
Anything you truly enjoyed in the past 2.5 weeks?
Robin. My number one recommendation is Robin, which is on Netflix. So go watch it.
All right. Let's talk about the Batman for a minute. Have either of you seen it?
No.
This is one of those where I'm like, okay, good job. Who was that for exactly? Like, if you want to make a 3-hour, you know, pitch black, film noirish, you know, really brooding, slow, depressed Batman. You did it, and you did a good job of doing that thing. I don't know why we need that fun suck in the world. You know, like, call me kooky, but I like when the Joker, Jack Nicholson Joker, has a big parade of floats. You know, like, that's another way you could do this.
I don't understand why we keep... Batman's story has been told. We're good. Mm-hmm. I feel like we just can stop at any point.
I'm happy to report this was always Aaron Kleiber's complaint. We do not see his parents die. This is the first Batman content ever made where we talk extensively about his parents dying, but
no
don't
pearls.
Actually, no pearls.
Are you sure? If you wear 3D sure? glasses, do they show pearls?
Are you sure?
You know what I should have taken? You know what I do recommend is the original 13 Ghosts.
Yes.
If you saw it in the theater, they gave you a viewer, and they were like, if you believe in ghosts, look through the red lens. If you don't, look through the blue lens. And if it wasn't 3D. It was, if you looked through the blue, because I got a pair of like the old school 3D glasses and replicated the effect at home. If you looked through the blue one, it filtered out the ghosts. Nice. And looked like the human characters were just scared of nothing. And if you looked through the red one, you could see the ghosts clearly.
Wow.
What I'm saying is, if I had brought that to the theater, I would have seen Martha Pearls. Die and every... Yeah, the Pearls and every...
I saw 13 ghosts on a coach bus going from Pitt's campus to Allentown, Pennsylvania. No one handed me glasses.
Like, no, probably.
Oh, what, somebody just had like a mobile DVD player? Was that...
No, this was back in the day when they used to like put an actual VHS into the bus system.
Yeah.
You know, and this it was like I saw Enough starring Jennifer Lopez that way. those are the two movies that come to mind. But yeah, I used to take that bus every Thanksgiving and saw a bunch of movies that way.
Anyway, if you want the Batman stuff, if you just need Batman stuff all the damn time in your life, it's there. I'm not going to tell you it's bad. It's good. It's just profoundly unnecessary.
I mean, I'm sure eventually I'll watch it, but I'm pretty good on, like, with Nolan's Batman trilogy. Like,
yeah.
It's fine.
I liked Fresh on Hulu, Sebastian Stan really carving out a niche for himself as someone who you would go on a date with knowing that he might eat you. Like, that's literally the case in this film. But, like, it's kind of always the case with him. You're like, I would, but he might kill me. Like, but he's just...
also has the niche of being abusive boyfriend in an iconic 90s scandal happening for him through I, Tonya and the...
That's true.
Pam Anderson.
He was in I, Tonya?
Yeah, he was the boyfriend who broke the kneecaps.
See, that's the thing. Like, with Sebastian Stan, like, he is, like, unrecognizable. And, like, from project to project, to me anyway, like I just don't care enough about him to like really afford to point out
he tries hard to be that.
Yeah,
like, he's very much one of those, like, Brad Pitt has, you know, really built his star around this idea of I'm a character actor in a movie star's body kind
okay,
of thing.
Brad,
yeah, right, exactly.
You're Brad Pitt in this situation, like,
right, exactly. Like, Sebastian Stan is both not as attractive as Brad Pitt and not as good an actor as Brad Pitt, but like, right. I do like him, so I feel bad insulting him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's not bad, but
no,
you know,
he's not bad.
I tried to watch that Pammy. I always fuck up the
Pammy
name.
Pammy and Tom.
Yeah, like I tried to watch it like 2 episodes in. I'm like, this is utter chaos, and I can't do it.
I was really excited about it, but then like I saw that Pam Anderson did not want them to make it, and then I was really? Like, oh, yeah. This feels too gross. I can't do it.
Wow, she's like,
that's wall to wall naked people without for 1 second being sexy, and I think that's part of the point. Like, I think part of the point is you're looking at them and you go.
Is that how folks looked at the tape? The sex tape?
No. I think the tape found its audience. I like the eyes. I finally watched The Eyes of Tammy Faye. I like it. I don't think it's like award worthy, but it's a very, you know, fun, watchable. Good. It's the good kind of biopic where it's like, here's a look at this person. It's not, we're not trying to be profound. We're just showing, telling you this person, this weird person's story. Great. Right.
Yeah.
Other than that starts with Andrew Garfield and Jessica Chastain like being all flirty and handsy and heavy petting, and then, you know, an hour and a half later I think to look up Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, and not hot, they are not Andrew Garfield and Jessica Chastain. And the City Paper's Amanda Waltz informed me on Twitter when I made that point, they were also teeny. She was like 4'11 and he was like 5'2. Like, you are not hot movie stars.
Short Regents.
I didn't realize that they were that small. I just assumed they were smaller people, but yikes. Wow. So you had never, so you looked up like young Tammy Faye and what's his butt? Or
I just looked up their pictures because I truly didn't know what they look like.
Really?
I mean, that, like, he was already in jail by the time I would have been 10, you know, like before I would have had any idea. Who he was.
Yumeel, you said you watched them, right? Mm-hmm. You saw them. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you think that they were hot and or small?
I did not realize they were small, that small. I assumed Tammy Faye was small, and just by, you know, juxtaposition, like, you know, obviously her husband was small on the shorter side, but whatever. No, they were not hot at all. I did not think that at all. But yeah, I was very much aware of their existence in real life, in real time.
Mm-hmm. And finally, sorry, I'm taking too much of it, but since Robin mentioned it, Saint Maud is really good.
What a cool movie, right?
It's not going to be for everyone, but man, do I like a horror movie that does that. Is she talking to God or she's crazy? Psst, she's crazy. Like, I love that as a storyline, and very brutal at times and hard to watch, but man, good, quick, great performance, great direction.
No, this is watch famously when I have to watch horror movies. Have to. I did not have to watch this. I just chose to. I often will be like, well, I'm going to read the Wikipedia summary so that I'm warned. Right. Then often when I'm reading it, I'm like, oh, what I'm imagining is probably worse than what's in the movie. This is an example of what I was imagining was nowhere close to as bad as what was in the movie.
Wow.
So buckle up.
Yeah. Really, really good, though. And another, that and the filmmaker who made Fresh, I apologize, I forget her name right now. But those are both debuts, man, ready for more from those filmmakers. Camila, made your wait long enough. What are you watching?
No movies. I've been like doing a lot of Apple TV Plus shows and stuff, but I did like, there are three, actually not even Apple, these are all on Netflix, but three things on Netflix that I that got my goat. Inventing Anna, like,
oh yeah, totally. I watched every episode. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, like I feel like it could have been done, we could have knocked that out in four episodes, told that story. Absolutely.
I will say Colin and I love saying my foundation.
At the F, I am a businesswoman.
At the F is more exclusive than Saha Club.
What do you pause something? I don't like your face. I don't have time for this. But it's, I was just like so taken aback by the fact that she got so far and away with so much. And you know, had she been like, you know, let that had been somebody posing as an African heiress, I'm just saying, like, you know, right? That shit would have been nipped in the bud ages ago. Like, day one, like, when she tried to pull some bullshit on a, like, skipping out on her hotel bill. Or not, she, it wouldn't even been allowed to, like, stayed there 2 hours without having put down a credit card that was working. So it's just, it's insane.
A wire transfer.
Yeah. The whole thing is insane to me. Yeah, it's just crazy and kooky. So if you like crazy and kooky nonsense, just watch it. If you like trashy white people drama, and that's, you know, rich white people, I'm still not even sure, did she have money at any point? Like, where was she getting the $100 bills to tip everybody? Like, I don't, there's so many questions.
I agree, but Camila, I did enjoy, it was a big Scandal reunion.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like, everyone in that show, I was like, oh, Scandal, right. Scandal.
Which, you know, totally props, I'm totally here for it. So, I mean, yeah. It's definitely good trash TV to watch and to binge watch it and just be like, just spend like the next 10 episodes like, what the fuck? So, I'm really upset with like Neff, and it's just, I mean, I like the actress, like, I'm really here for that actress, but the character of Neff or the person of Neff is ridiculously an idiot. And but
okay, so I tweeted about this, but I truly was like, I recognize her, and then I went and looked at her IMDb and had not seen any of her other credits, but she studied at CMU, and so I was like, did I see her in a play?
Interesting.
So I tried to like dig a little deeper and see what stage stuff she had done, and I saw her like acting resume with her skills listed, and one of them was Britney Spears singing impression.
Okay.
And so I maybe need to see it.
So there's that. And also another thing about Anna, like, just the way she talked to people, I'm surprised she managed to like go through life without a broken jaw. Like, it's, you know,
truly is amazing.
Like, her, the way she came out of pocket at that intervention, like, that bitch would have been fucked up. So the other thing on Netflix that I watched was Genius, the Kanye West trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm not going to get too deep into what my theory is about Kanye, except for the fact that I feel like he lost his way when his mom died.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what really like kicked him in the pants. And
yeah.
He lost his North Star. So no, that's not his kid's name.
But almost, right?
Right, yeah.
It's Northwest.
So, yeah. And also, I mean, it was very intriguing. I think maybe the third episode, it got to be a little like for the director. Or the filmmaker, as opposed to Kanye, because there was a point in time when Kanye cut him off or like wasn't hanging out with him. So this dude is like, okay, I'm gonna fill up time with my life. The last thing was The Worst Roommate Ever. Have you did either of you watch that?
What is that?
It's like a true crime, a four-part docuseries about just like these poor people who lived with these folks who were just like, one was like I forget her name, but she was like a serial killer, like this like a old lady who was just like killing people and taking their social security checks like when they moved in with her. There was a dude who was like a serial squatter, which was like terrorized and like told, like, just like fucked up several people's lives. And there was there were two other people that were murderers, I believe. But yeah, so it's like, it'll hopefully, like, I would feel like it's better off for you to watch it if you're already in your comfortable living situation and you're not like searching for a roommate, because it'll definitely ward you off that experience. But it is very interesting.
Can you believe that people who are 18 years old with the hormones and the knowing nothing and the emotions get sent to live out of their house for the first time with a complete stranger?
Yeah.
What?
Like why? Like, if you, yeah, just like the whole odyssey of, you know, you graduate from high school and now you're on your way to college. If you were just to write that down out of context, like somebody, and just give it to a stranger and just like, this doesn't seem right. Like, this, no. Like, you want them, they're supposed to know what they're doing with, like, have this person choose what they're doing with the rest of their lives at this age and point in time.
First you choose what you want to do with the rest of your life. Then we send you away from your family to an environment where everyone's trying to fuck and there's booze everywhere. You're supposed to go to class. What?
And you're going to live with somebody you've never met before in your life, and you're going to live with them for the next quarter or whatever, 3 months.
With them, and in a big building with, there's no room larger than a healthy walk-in closet with thousands of people. What happens if it catches on fire? The greatest tragedy in the history of mankind.
And good luck. And most of you don't know how to.
As it is.
Most of you don't know how to make a meal or wash your clothes or basically barely wipe your own ass. But good luck.
I say this having lived in the largest freestanding dormitory complex outside of Russia at Penn State University.
What are the non-freestanding dormitory complexes? What does that mean?
I think that means that the complex I lived in had thousands of students, but in several buildings that, like, standalone buildings. So others would be like a giant university facility, like picture Point Park, but bigger, where there's lots of people living there, but it's
okay.
Right on. We didn't do several Black Hawk Down segments because we were too busy complaining. You want to talk about the trailer?
Okay.
You shouldn't have come here. This is our war. Not yours.
300,000 dead and counting. That's not a war, Mr. Ito. It's genocide.
These people, they have no food. We can either help, or we can sit back and watch a country destroy itself on CNN.
RPG! Hold on! 6-4
gone down.
Got a
Black Hawk down. Black Hawk.
My men are surrounded by thousands of Somali militia. I need help now.
Where's the rescue squad?
We're in.
I can't do it.
It's what you do right now that makes a difference.
People ask me, why do you do it, man? They want to understand it's about the men next to you.
Don't let that man crawl! Somebody help that man!
Nobody asks to be a hero. It just sometimes turns out that way.
Listen. I do think that the trailer is less good than the movie, which I hate saying.
Less good than the movie.
Like, I think that the trailer makes the movie look like an even worse version of what it actually is.
Yes.
I think I disagree. I would file this under a trailer that makes me want to see the movie even though I don't think I'll enjoy it.
Really?
Okay.
Like, I'm having this right now with that Channing Tatum movie Dog. Like, I keep I keep almost going to see Dog, because the trailer is like, this makes me want to know what happens to that dog. I'm going to sit there for 2 hours not liking the movie, but I want to know.
You know, inevitably going to be at a drive-in multi-feature of Dog, Pig, and Lamb, right?
Yeah. No, there was a cow that came out last week. Did you hear about Cow?
I remember First Cow, but not Cow.
No, Cow was like a narrative breaking documentary. It was just a documentary about a cow. There was nothing but shots of the cow. Oh, anyway, that's the trailer. I brought up this Letterboxd list because I do want Camila's opinion. Black Hawk Down appears on the Letterboxd list. Tom Hardy ranked by how much of his dialogue is unintelligible. This is low on the list. This is 12 out of 16.
So this is saying that it is more intelligible?
Yes, the Black Hawk Down is more intelligible.
Very little dialogue.
Right, but this is true because I barely understood what he said.
But he is also speaking around his original teeth.
Aww.
No shade to crooked teeth. I have crooked teeth. But Tom Hardy's original teeth, quite different.
Yeah.
Of course, number one is The Dark Knight Rises, obviously.
Fair enough.
Followed by The Revenant, Legend, where he's got a Cockney accent.
Right.
Mad Max Fury Road, he's doing a lot of...
He barely has any actual words in that.
My name is Max.
Yeah. And Lawless. So, Camila, any thoughts? Do you always understand him? Or
that is exactly where I would have ranked those. That is perfect. Yeah. Legend, I think I had to put subtitles on.
Right.
Peaky Blinder, definitely subtitles always. And Mad Max. Mm-hmm. I do not always understand Tom. It's a difficult thing.
No. But you don't have to.
But I'm not really there for the conversation. So it's it's fine.
Let's draw a movie. We will be talking about Empire Records soon, but that's not all. We will also be discussing the Rugrats movie.
Nope.
Unless someone feels like not. Now, I will remind you that we just brought this up because it's the third shortest movie on the list.
Yeah.
With Land Before Time being the shortest. That doesn't mean I want to watch it.
I don't want to watch it. I know. I will veto.
Exercise my veto, man.
I feel like we've got like a trigger finger thing here where Robin and I know that Camila will eventually veto something before we do.
All right.
I didn't want her to know.
That's fine. It's totally fine.
Camila, we've been using you.
I know I'm usually the first one. It's fine. It's because my time is precious.
I will take advantage of that.
You just spent 2.5 hours of it on Black Hawk.
Right,
Down.
Exactly. Right. It's like, I won't. I can't. Now watch, the next one's going to be fucking Tyler Perry. And I'm gonna.
I know, right.
As a reminder.
No veto available.
You cannot veto twice in a row, meaning we have to. Oh my God. Meaning we have to go straight from Black Hawk Down to Saving Private Ryan.
You're
back,
fucking
saddle
kidding
up
me.
The horses again. More gore. More what? White soldiers.
What?
More death.
I am picking up my arm and I am angrily carrying it.
Can we just duplicate this podcast episode? Just like, you know, edit in Private Ryan every time we say Black Hawk Down. Because I feel like it's going to be all the same.
Probably not, because as far as I remember, Saving Private Ryan is a good movie.
Okay.
Unlike this one, but I'm glad to actually watch it because I'm pretty sure the only time I watched it was literally on a laptop screen. This deserves some sound and picture quality.
Yeah.
So
I saw it probably pan and scan, rented from Blockbuster in 1999.
I have a recollection of seeing at least the first scene, but I don't think I've watched the whole thing.
You mean the first 40 minutes?
Nah, I don't know. I don't.
Okay.
I don't know. I have
the
no
first
idea.
Scene is like is 40 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I remember at least the opening.
The landing.
Like at some point,
I
recall that, but I don't know if I actually watched the whole movie.
You vetoed a movie we could have watched twice in full with change in the time it takes to watch 2 hours and 49 minutes.
No,
you know what? I'm not sorry.
Fine. I did think about rewatching this when Sean and I appeared on the bracket night at Arcade Comedy Theater, Tom Hanks bracket. I thought about rewatching it, and it wasn't free to stream. And if it had been, I would have. So this felt inevitable.
Hey, this is certainly a big deal. This is one we should get to.
And a lot of expensive baubles to talk about.
What were we going to say about the Rugrats movie? You know?
Right.
So I was going to talk a lot about the Mastery Andreas, the kids I babysat for, one of whom I think is a doctor now. It's very upsetting.
Wow.
That shouldn't shouldn't be possible. Well,
wow, Tom Sizemore again. Cool. That's awesome.
Wasn't it weird how one of the characters was named Sizemore and it wasn't Tom Sizemore? That was very distracting. They should have changed that character's name. I don't care if it was a real person.
Absolutely.
Before we get from the long 2001 war movie to the long 1999 war movie.
1998.
1998, sorry. Black Hawk Down, I'm counting the week it went to number one, not its initial release. Black Hawk Down hit number one on the January 18th to 20th, that weekend in 2002. What was the number one song in America?
2002.
Ja Rule!
I think I just had a dream about this artist.
That
doesn't help you. How did you know I had a dream about Usher?
Because I watched The Faculty starring Josh Hartnett and Usher last night.
Why? You just needed to get like a Josh Hartnett?
Because truly I just put it on because I wanted to watch something I had seen before but knew was good.
Right.
Colin loved it. Yeah, so Usher, this is before Yeah, so this would be...
This is before Yeah? Oh, yeah.
It's before that, Yeah, yeah.
It's not... No, you make me... Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You Make Me Wanna was like 99.
Right.
It is, yes. Yes, it is in the valley between You Make Me Wanna and Yeah, Yeah. Are we all clear?
Yes.
All right.
My Boo?
No, it is neither of those. I don't know this one, so I can't help you any further.
Confessions, something like that?
No, that's the same album as Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I know.
I don't believe that I know. Is it just Usher by himself?
Yes. Half of this song title shares a song title with Prince, which is hard considering the weird spelling.
For you. Compares to you.
You.
The letter U.
Yeah. If that was Prince, it would be.
You don't have to?
If it were Prince, it would be You Got the Look, but Usher's is called...
You have a legitimate style quality about you? I don't know.
That's good. I would listen to that. It's You Got It Bad.
I would never have gotten there. And I'm really glad that we just let it go.
Just buckled down.
Why is Josh Hartnett in the air? I just watched Halloween H2O. That's introducing Josh Hartnett.
Listen.
How did he float back in through the atmosphere?
So the thing about Josh Hartnett is that when I was a kid, and in the years that my family lived in southeastern PA, there was this guy at Gladwin Elementary School named Jared Vanor, and I had a huge crush on him. And then we moved away. We moved back to New Jersey.
I hope he's a listener.
We moved back to New Jersey, and Josh Hartnett became a thing, and I was like, that's what Jared Vanor would look like now, right? And I was like super, super into him on that basis. And then enough of AOL became a thing such that I was able to reconnect. This was pre-Facebook, but I was able to reconnect with Jared Vanor, and I saw pictures of him post-puberty, and I was like, nope, does not look like Josh Hartnett. And I feel like the bloom fell off the rose for both of those people.
Aww. Yeah.